Thus have I sunk to where I dwell now, and if I seek to rise, it can only be by drawing up with me step by step, all those whom I have drawn down. Their number is legion, and each one is as a great load of iron that I must raise even as I raise myself. Not one can I neglect or leave behind. Wonder not, then, that I stand as one stands shivering on the banks of an icy stream, hesitating to plunge into that cleansing flood, which flows over difficulties and through lands of suffering which it appalls me to contemplate. And if it must be thus with me, such as I am, who though, as ye may think, have sinned almost past redemption, what must be the task of repentance to these mighty rulers? What the periods of time through which they will have to labor? And yet it had been taught by certain of our prophets that there was ultimate redemption even for the fallen angels. The prophet Zerdusht, whom some have deemed to be the reincarnation of the great Zoroaster himself, taught even that it was so. Yea, and of a truth he was a wondrous teacher and a mighty prophet. I wonder not that men thought him the ancient founder of the Persian religion come to earth again, for in my wanderings o'er the earth plain, I have many a time and oft stayed my flight to listen to his teachings, and when I did so, I ever beheld the spirit of the mighty Zoroaster himself enveloping Zerdusht as with a mantle, and inspiring him with the thoughts to which he gave utterance. And yet even Zerdusht could scarce conceive how stupendous a task redemption must prove unto these dark angels. The mortal sight ever dimmed the perfection of the spiritual vision, and though he grasped much of the truths imparted unto him, yet a certain measure of their most subtle essence was of necessity lost. Moreover, Zerdusht, like all prophets, started with certain beliefs founded upon the earth, recorded teachings of the great Zoroaster, which of necessity partook of the imperfections of those earthly conditions under which they were given. For, great as was the founder of the religion of your own father's country, O Ahimsemen, neither he nor any prophet of any race could entirely rise above that cloud of materiality, which ever obscures in a greater or less degree the vision of those on earth who seek to penetrate the mysteries of the higher spheres. So long as man the spirit preserves any ties to the earthly body he has inhabited, so long will its earthly nature obscure the clearness of his spiritual sight, and those seekers after knowledge who have thought to wander through the spirit world and view its wonders and its mysteries with their spiritual eyes while they yet remained in the earthly envelope in its integrity, have fallen into yet greater errors than any others, because the dual nature of the sight they thus exercised served to confuse their vision of both sides of life. Like a couple of weights hung at either end of a floating stick, these two forms of sight weigh down both faculties of the mind at once, and even as it would be impossible for either end of the stick to rise into the air or float on the surface of the water while thus weighted, so the mind, embarrassed by the two forms of sight, sinks beneath waves of error and confusion. But, said I in astonishment, doth not a clairvoyant in the flesh, whose spiritual sight is for the time unveiled, behold spiritual things while yet attached unto his earthly body? Have not I myself wandered through the spheres, while thus attached to my body by a magnetic thread? Manzur laughed a low, soft laugh as he replied, You may have wandered through the earth plane, and even have caught a glimpse of the second spheres that lie above and below the earth plane, but you did not pass higher or lower than its first circles. You did imagine without doubt that you did visit spheres of wondrous exaltation when you did behold your visions in the temple, but in very truth, till all ties between man and earth be severed, the soul of man cannot penetrate beyond the second sphere, which like a twin belt of light and dark encircles the great earth plane. What the clairvoyant beholds are the scenes of the higher or lower spheres projected upon his mental sight like pictures from the minds of spirits who dwell in those spheres. For the time being these spirits so dominate your mental vision that the sense of your own individuality is lost, and you dost imagine that it is you who sest with your own eyes the scenes these spirits looked upon. You may say that you are taken in spirit into these scenes, and in one sense it would be true, but your spirit doth not travel from earth to them. When you was in the temple this controlling mind was either that of the priest who stood by your side while you was in the trance condition, or that of some spirit in close accord with him. It might even be that the minds of both priest and spirit influenced you at once, if they were both in accord with each other and with you. With Jalal ad-Din, it was I who projected the images upon your mind, for I so dominated Jalal ad-Din that in his studies he had learned to sink his own will altogether and keep his mind in abeyance while you was in your trance. He knew enough to know how great is the need for such passivity in those who surround the earthly clairvoyant. Thus his mind became for the time as colorless as a globe of clear water, and had it not been that death intervened between us, I should, through your aid, have been able to give him the teachings he sought, and shown through pictures, which I would have projected upon your mind, the true conditions of spirit life in those spheres, which I have myself beheld. As for you, Ahinsiman, you shall behold the spirit world for thyself, and shall wander in spheres where I, alas, may not enter. I have consulted the stars on your behalf, and lo, I perceive that your star is already in the ascendant. As for Jalal ad-Din and myself, our paths lie yet through darkened ways. In my control of him, I dragged his moral nature down for the satisfaction of mine animal passions, even while I elevated his intellectual powers, and Jalal ad-Din I must raise ere I can take one upward step myself. We are alike wallowing in the mire of our own corrupt desires, and I question whether either of us will ever have a sincere wish to rise to better things. He spoke as though he was uttering his own thoughts aloud rather than addressing me, and I could see that he had almost forgotten my presence. Chapter 11, Mansur's sacrifice to save me. Our further conversation was interrupted by a burst of the ear-splitting music, which announced that the sport was about to begin. The two angels having ascended the marble steps, and seated themselves upon two bronze seats in the form of winged beasts, an immense canopy of black and crimson was held above their heads by a number of slaves. At a signal from the angel of the Red Star, the arena became filled with savage animals, or rather the spiritual counterparts of what had been such animals in earth life. They appeared to rise from the ground as though they had been imprisoned in it, and at once, and with great ferocity, attacked each other, while the dark, degraded spirits who formed the spectators began excitedly to wager themselves and such possessions as they had upon the chances of the different brutes they had selected. This part of the entertainment was, however, of short duration. The real interest of the show was yet to come. As soon as victory had declared itself in favor of one of the animals, it was at once caught in a big net and drawn to one side of the enclosure, and when the last contest between brute and brute was over, a number of human spirits were driven like cattle into the enclosure, the nets were withdrawn from the savage spirit animals, and a fierce contest between them and the spirit men took place, closely resembling similar contests on earth, only that as one brute after another was killed, fresh ones were brought from the caverns below and let loose upon the unhappy men till the arena looked like one vast shambles. Here no quarter was given, nor expected, and both sides fought till their antagonists were a mere mass of bloody fragments, even as I had seen on the occasion of the conflict between the animals of the astral plane. I was still watching with feelings of mingled aversion and surprise, when Mansur touched my arm, and drawing me aside from the rest of the throng, led me to a small cavern, which seemed hollowed out of the black earth beneath the crowded arena. My conductor's manner had undergone a considerable change since he had discoursed so philosophically with me a short time before. He was visibly agitated, and seemed torn by two conflicting emotions, one of which caused him to wish to do me a friendly turn, and the other to fear the possible consequences to himself. "See, Ahinsiman," said he, "the Dark Angel is in much wrath with you, for he looked to draw Artemisia here with you, and now he thinks she will escape him. You will be called upon shortly to take your place with others in yonder scene of savagery. You wilt have to depend upon your own powers for victory. But seek not to fight them with the weapon of your brutish strength, for, lo, in mere brute force the lower animal is superior. Fight them with the weapons of your intellect and your will. Subjugate them by the force of your higher nature, your stronger soul." He paused and looked around with an expression of furtive cunning ere he continued, hurriedly, drawing as he spoke a small slender black wand, not 2 feet long, from his sleeve and putting it in my hand, "Behold, I will even give you this, the greatest gift anyone could give you here. See, It is the scepter that was used by a great spirit who once dwelt within this sphere, and ruled with a power that transcended even that of our master, the Dark Angel, before whom you must appear. Long had the owner of this wand departed from this sphere into higher regions. He is one of those who had elected to climb the upward path, despite its toils, but this wand bears yet the influence of his personality, and carries with it the power of his stupendous still. If you just hold the point of it in your hand and suffer the wand itself to rest upon your arm, under the powerful spell that it doth exercise, even these savage brutes must tremble before you, and even the Dark Angel himself will scarce prevail against your will. I may not say more, for already they come to fetch you, and I may not be found with you that I draw upon myself the anger of our master. He thrust his gift into my hand and was gone before I could thank him, and while I was examining the slender wand, the little cavern was suddenly invaded by a number of dark spirits of the most revolting type, who came to drag me before the Dark Angel. Instead of allowing them to seize me, however, I signed to them to stand back, and said that I would follow them if they preceded me. A savage laugh greeted my suggestion, but when they found that they could not touch me, after making several attacks, they drew back snarling like a pack of wolves, and signed to me to follow them through an opening into the arena, which brought us out in front of the Dark Angel's throne. Chapter 12. How death is possible even in hell, Mansa's fate. Strange indeed was the scene upon which mine eyes rested as I stepped into the arena. The great masses of dark smoke which rose continually from the ground in clouds like steam, hung overhead, and were tinged with the red reflections from the blood-stained ground, and the fiery light from many beacons and flaring torches, which blazed on all sides, and were fed, not with material fuel, but with the burning passions of the spirits around me. What had become of the souls, the immortal parts of those who had contended in the battles I had witnessed, I knew not, but the mangled remains of their spirit bodies strewed the arena in all directions. For mortals must know, that while the soul is the truly immortal and indestructible part of man, or animal or plant, the mere body in which it is clothed for the time being, whether it be the body of the earthly stage of life, or the more ethereal envelope that enfolds it during the so-called spiritual stages of existence, is in no sense lasting. The body can be destroyed in spirit life as in earth life, and its entire destruction is in truth its death, for it and the soul can never be united again once they are separated, and a body deprived of its vivifying soul must disintegrate and be resolved again into the atoms of which it was formed. If the body of a spirit be so battered and bruised, so rent in pieces that it can no longer serve to shelter the soul, then by a violent severance between the two the soul is freed from the spirit body, just as it would be freed from the earth body, and passes into yet another stage of its existence, there to reclothe itself in a fresh body taken from the elements that compose the new sphere in which it finds itself. The natural life of the earth body is by far the shortest in duration, and a spirit body of any sphere may often continue for centuries to serve as the envelope of its soul, that is, if the soul remains in a state of development suitable only for that particular sphere. As soon, however, as the soul is ready for a higher stage of life, it must cast off its envelope, be it of the earth or spirit spheres, even as a nut casts off its outer husk that the kernel within may be free to expand and grow. With some souls these processes of deaths, from that of the earth body onward, are gentle and gradual, and only like passing through a quiet sleep, to arise in a new sphere clothed in the new body of the soul. With others, the body is shattered by violence, and torn from the soul amidst suffering and struggle. Yet in all cases the result to the mere body is the same, it goes to its decay and death, while the soul it had released passes onward to a new stage of its immortality. Thus it will be seen that death reigns the spirit world over the spiritual envelope of the soul, even as he reigns on earth over the earthly body. And as the earthly body is destined to return to the elements of the earth in the form of dust, so does the spiritual envelope return to the elements of each sphere from which it was taken. Let not those who may read this story of my life and wanderings in the spirit world wonder that I should describe the deaths of spirits. I describe but the deaths of their bodies as I might describe the death of a mortal body on earth. death had no dominion over the soul in earth of spirit life, but because the sight of one clothed in the garments of mortality, or of some particular sphere, cannot follow the flight of the soul as it leaves the envelope, which death had just claimed for its own, it had been imagined by some that the soul exists not, and that all there was of the friend we loved, or the foe we hated, lies in the poor rigid form, which death had touched and turned into decay. I knew the body to be a mere shell. My studies had taught me that it was in all respects distinct from my true self. I had parted with one body already. I cared not to linger in so fearful a sphere as this in which I now found myself, and yet, so strong is the attachment between the soul and its envelope, so great the tenacity with which the two cling together, that as I faced that bloody scene of carnage and thought I also was doomed to such a death as that of those whose remains I saw before me, I grasped yet more firmly the means of escape which Mansour had given me and turned to face the Prince of Darkness, strong in my determination not to yield to him one inch, until I should be literally overborne by his superior power. As I raised my eyes to look upon the dark angel, I saw that the pillars, which upheld the canopy above his head, were formed of men's bodies, round which huge serpents had twisted their supple forms, and as they met my gaze, each serpent opened its jaws and shot out at me its forked tongue, charged with deadly poison, while their green eyes glittered with the reflection of their master's hatred. As for the King of Evil himself, he rose to his feet, and pointing at me said, in a voice of scornful anger, "Behold, now I have prepared a fresh diversion for ye all, for this man is no common knave, like unto those wretched beings whom my beasts have torn to pieces. This is one whose thoughts soar to heaven and fall back into hell. This is a man who thought himself fit to be a king, yea, even a king in hell. Oh, ye powers of darkness, think of it. Imagine this man thinking to reign over aught that lives in these vile lands, when already his heart sickens at the sight of yonder fair scene before us, when he had not strength of purpose strong enough to resist a woman's scream of anguish. He asked to reign, and, behold, I gave him yonder dark solitary pit for his kingdom, the only spot hereover which he was fit to reign. He offered me his service, his faithful service, if I would grant him his revenge, and, behold, already he repents him of his bargain, and thinks how he may escape from me. What value, think ye, had the service of such a man? He vowed to fight for me as a soldier serves his general, but what use could I make of so craven a soul? With whom can I set him to contend, save these lower brutes, to which his carcass may serve as a plaything and a meal? He stamped his foot, and instantly six savage tigers rose through the ground and rushed at me. But I pointed at them my finger, whereon there rested the point of the little wand, and they crouched down before me, growling but submissive, watching me as a cat watches a bird, yet not daring to advance one step. In vain did the dark spirits crowd round and goad them on. In vain did they strive to reach me themselves. A wall seemed to surround me like a ring, and while I kept my determination, and held fast by the wand, none could pass. They hurled themselves at me, they flung spears, they tried to float above me and drop huge stones and masses of burning metal. The demoniacal spectators literally yelled with joy and excitement at the unexpected sport. Multitude after multitude of the dark angel's followers gathered round me, and above me, and sought to break through the mystic ring and tear me to pieces. Hordes of wild beasts, and men as savage, gathered from all sides, and it required all the power of my will to hold them at bay and retain my grasp of the wonderful wand. But the taunting words of the dark angel had aroused the spirit of the warrior within me, and I felt that I hurled defiance at his head every time he sought to beat down my determination with his own. In a voice hoarse with passion, he called for legion upon legion of his dark hosts, and against them all the invisible ring around me remained impregnable. Suddenly a thought struck the dark angel, and with a fearful cry of rage he called for the unfortunate Mansour to be brought before him. "Vile caitiff," he cried, "this is your doing. You hast given unto this man some secret power that enables him to defy me thus. I cannot discern what it is, for a light like unto a diamond star cometh ever between us, but I know that from your hand the gift has come. It is you, traitor, who had dealt me this blow, and thus do I reward you. Let your body be torn limb from limb by these creatures that your pupil yonder doth defy, and may your wretched carcass be strewn as dust over this dark plain, for you art no longer fit to serve me." The unfortunate Manzor, who had been whirled into the presence of his master by the violence of the will that summoned him, cast one despairing glance at me, and uttered one sharp cry of horror. The next instant he was engulfed in the awful sea of diabolical beings, and ere I could collect my thoughts, or make one effort to save him, he was literally torn into a thousand pieces before mine eyes, the horrible creatures who had slain him fighting with each other over every fragment. I tried to rush to his rescue, and I held out the potent wand before me to try to clear a passage, but it was all over in a moment before I could advance more than a step, and the only effect of my agitated effort was to break the spell around myself, and leave me for the moment defenseless. Before the dreadful devils who had destroyed Manzur could take advantage of this, however, the Dark Angel with the Green Star interposed on my behalf, and proposed to his companion that they should try their skill at chess, in order to decide who was to dispose of me. "Behold, this man had made a good fight," said he. "He had qualities not unworthy of a foe's steel. I will play you for his soul, and if I win you shall hand him over to serve me. Nay, he shall be my slave, he shall labor in the depths of this earth's sphere till that haughty spirit, which defied even my power, be broken, and he owns me as master." "I will not play you for him," replied the still furious Angel of the Red Star. The other fixed his steely eyes upon his companion's face, and said, "You dost forget. His vow was to serve you as a soldier, not as a slave. I pray you reconsider your determination not to play for him, for you canst not enslave him, you canst only make him serve you as a soldier serves. He belongs not to your kingdom, save inasmuch as he voluntarily sold himself to you, you canst but claim the measure of your bargain from him." The Angel of the Red Star rose from his seat once more, and casting down what looked to me like his javelin at the feet of the Angel of the Green Star, he cried out, "Be it so. Since you hast thought fit to question the limits of my power, we will even play our game for this man's body, for his soul you thyself doth say we cannot play, but for the possession of his body, and for the right to such service as he can be forced to give, we will even play. Let the one who wins take him, and then let us fight, not with these paltry toys in mere sport, but in deadly earnest, that we may test whether you or I are the stronger angel here, whether I shall take instruction from you as to what I can do, or whether you shall learn to keep silence when I have issued my decrees." The other spirit frowned angrily, as he stooped to pick up the gauge, then thrusting his own javelin into the head of the bronze figure of a winged beast, which supported the throne of the Angel of the Fiery Star, he said, "Let my weapon rest there till I come as a conqueror over you, to pluck you from your seat, and teach you that you dost not reign as the sole king of hell." The fiery crown of the angel addressed seemed to glow like a circlet of white-hot steel, and dart out its flames like arrows to stab the other while he spoke, but he himself said nothing, but only signed with the old haughty majesty of manner to his foe to seat himself again to begin their game. Chapter 13, The Battle and My Fate, The Second Death. I shall not enter into all the details of the game the two dark angels played, as each contended with almost equal skill. At last a slight chance decided the contest in favor of the Angel of the Green Star. While the game was in progress, I had remained unmolested at the foot of the steps leading up to the throne, while the enormous mass of horrible spirits who had torn my poor friend Manzur to pieces, hung like a cloud of evil vultures around me. The moment the contest was decided, a yell of disappointment and rage rent the air, and the arena was invaded from all sides by dark spirits, eager to take part in the approaching battle. With a gesture of haughty contempt, the defeated angel signed to me to take my place under the banner of my new commander, who was already summoning around him his own army of followers. They were easily distinguished from the followers of the Dark Angel of the Red Star, for each spirit bore a spark of green light like the star worn by their king, while those who followed the Angel of the Blood Red Star carried little sparks of the crimson light. As the angels parted with looks of hatred and defiance, I saw two magnificent winged horses appear for them to ride, the size of the wings symbolizing the all-soaring ambition of their riders. When the two leaders had mounted these singular steeds, a troop of horses, also winged but with much smaller wings, were led out and upon them were mounted the different generals of both sides. Only one horse had no rider, and to my surprise, it was led up to me, and I was directed by my new master to mount upon its back. "You hast an ambition to be a leader as great as any of us," said he. "Take then this winged steed and see that you fight for me in a fashion worthy of the gift." I bowed to him in reply, and as I vaulted onto the horse's back, the pleasure of finding myself once more in possession of one of those noble animals almost made me for the moment forget the horrors of my position and surroundings. At a signal from the leader, the army of dark spirits to which I was now attached drew off from the city, which they had entered as invited guests, and took up a position upon the vast black plains beyond. As we rode out under the ponderous dark gateways, I saw that the citizen spirits were engaged in all the preparations for withstanding a siege at our hands. If mere hatred could have killed, the glances of furious malignity, which they cast upon us, and which our side gave back to them, would have brought the contest to a speedy issue. The spirit in which men on earth enter upon such a conflict is amity itself compared to that which is aroused in those dark spheres, where the passions that lead to warfare and bloodshed rage with the fury of madness, and kindle around them the fierce flames of an almost universal conflagration, which spreads on all sides with the rapidity of a forest fire, and stays not its destroying march till conquerors and conquered alike are consumed in its fiery clutches, and the vast confines of that mighty sphere are strewn from end to end with the dry ashes of the lives these fires of passion have consumed, and those who survive the conflict reign over an almost depopulated territory, till the constant influx of evil spirits from the earthly life peoples their kingdoms once more. The constant ebb and flow of life into and out of these dark spheres, which is thus caused, serves to release many of the unhappy beings, and suffers them to pass into a state where their repentance may bear its fruits, and where, taught by their own sufferings, they may learn pity towards those of others, and mercy for those who are in their power. I should but sicken in disgust all who may read this story were I to attempt to give any picture of the horrors of the fight which I now witnessed. Let men imagine to themselves what all the horrors of war on earth really mean, and then add tenfold to their atrocity and their frightful cruelty, and still their visions will fall far short of the awful realities of the sights I beheld. Passions that were totally unbridled, hatred that was as deep as hell itself, a savage bestial brutality that was even below that of the brute creation, a thirst for each other's blood, which was appalling, a destructive force of magnetic wrath that shattered all around with a violence greater than that of the most powerful explosive known on earth in these latter days, a heat of anger that literally kindled into flame the very atmosphere, and a strength of determination to conquer that bore down all before it. These marked the struggle, and were almost equally balanced between the two evil angels, and kept the tide of battle swaying first in favor of one and then of the other. Not as men fight on earth, with spears and javelins, with swords and daggers, did these combatants and their soldiers fight. I found that the weapons they wore were merely ornaments, and counterparts worn because they had been used on earth. As soon as the battle began in earnest, the weapons were flung aside, and they assailed each other with tooth and claw, as do the lower animals, so great was their hunger to come into personal touch with their enemy, and rend them as a tiger rends his prey. As for me, such warfare utterly revolted me. I was borne forward in the first charge upon our enemies, and then, as the rival armies of dark spirits grappled with each other, uttering wild cries of ferocious hate that made the very canopy of hell resound with the blasphemous imprecations, as the tongues of magnetic flame, like spears of fire, darted around the struggling mass of combatants, and scorched and burned like red-hot knives, I was swept from my winged steed like a force, like a perfect tornado of savage hate. I saw the dark angel standing up in his stirrups, and hurling upon me the lightning of his wrath, the thunderbolts of his destroying power, and then the great mass of spirits closed around me and trampled over my body, fighting and wrestling with each other and stamping on my prostrate form, till oblivion fell upon my senses and I knew no more. Thus for the second time did Death, the great deliverer, unlock for me the portals of a new life.